The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 5 minutes past nine, Friday the 27th of February 2026. And you're very welcome along to the last Greg Hughes Show of the week. It's great to have you on board. And we're going to reward your loyalty with a cracking show over the course of the next hour. We have our Friday panel where we'll discuss and debate some of the key issues making the headlines in the region and across the country. And so much more besides coming up. If you want to get involved in the conversation, please do. We really encourage it. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and that is the text number. You can give us a call to on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. We can say good morning to Breed Curran, a solicitor. Good morning to you, Breed.
Morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us again. Paddy Rooney is chair of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Hi, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg.
And Councillor Patrick McGowan, are you there? He's, of course, Las Cahirlach of Lifford Snoddle Municipal District. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Greg. Sorry, my video doesn't seem to be working.
It's okay. It's okay. Thank you very much for joining us nonetheless. Right. With the government defending Ireland's participation in the €90 billion EU loan as a moral necessity, while the opposition argues that the lack of ring fencing for non-lethal aid violates our military neutrality. Is this funding a vital stand for democracy, or is Ireland effectively financing a war it claims to be neutral in? Breed, can I go to you first?
You always start with the hard ones for me, don't you, Greg?
Not intentionally, because I have full faith in you, whichever question I put to you, Breed.
Neutrality in Ireland, it has to be one of the most vague, flimsy, elastic notions that we have. I don't believe that this country is militarily neutral. It can't be militarily neutral. We're living in the most strange time. I'm 55 years of age. I don't think I've ever lived through the geopolitical tensions and machinations that are, I suppose, emanating, starting with the clown in the White House. But we're living in very, very strange and difficult times between cybersecurity. We have a war less than 3,000 kilometres away from us on the continent of Europe. I suppose with regards to the question, who are our allies? And I suppose we're most aligned with our European allies. And if we expect support from our allies, isn't it logical and reasonable that they would expect the same support from us? And that's the hypocrisy of all of this. We love to sit on the fence and pretend that we're neutral. We're not neutral. We're a member of the European Union. We have war on the continent of Europe for the first time since the middle of the last century. We're at a time when we're relying militarily on the UK to support us in the air. We're now setting up a national maritime strategy so that we can get support from the French and the UK with regards to maintaining security for these vital underwater pipelines. So we can't afford not to provide support for Ukraine with this $90 billion.
But if we not put ourselves in that position just to get to where we are now, because whilst we are part of a union, of course, we could still exercise political and military neutrality if we wanted to, and still invest in protecting our seas and on our responsibilities in that regard. Like, we've been slow walked into this position whereby you can make a very strong argument, which you have, that we're not neutral at all.
Well, this is the thing. This is the hypocrisy of it all. I mean, we're expecting the UK and France and our European allies to support us. And yet we're willing to sit back and say, oh, no, we're going to let your planes fly through Shannon and we're going to completely ignore that. It's completely hypocritical. We either need to use that old adage, pee or get off the pot now at this stage. And we need to decide what we're going to do in that regard. And I think the only way forward for us, given that we are now living in a global economy and, you know, that we're less than 3,000 kilometres from the western border with Poland and Ukraine, we really do need to have a long, hard think about what we're doing. I see during the week we said that we would purchase €600 million worth of French tanks to support us. I don't know whether that's the best use of funding in that regard. I would have thought that bolstering our sea and air defence was much more vital than buying 600 million euros worth of tanks. I'm sure that'll be useful in Finnair, but I'm not sure where else. They would. I just wonder about that. I think that our air and our maritime defences need to be strengthened. I think we're living in very, very uncertain times, and I think this notion, as I said at the very start, this notion that we're neutral is so flimsy and so elastic. It just, we're neutral when it suits us, and then when we have to put our hand in our pocket, suddenly then the opposition decide that we're not neutral. Or that we should be more neutral. We either are or we're not, and I think we need to have a conversation about it. I think the other thing with regards to buying 600 million euros worth of equipment, we need to invest seriously in manpower. We have very, very low numbers, particularly in the naval service, and that we need to look at that. We need to improve terms and conditions for our naval
officers. Well, yeah, the tank money could have come to that, because we need those we need those people all of the time. I'll come back to you in a moment. Paddy Rooney, what do you think?
Well, I think Breed has covered it fairly well there. And I suppose the big question is, I'm not a constitutional expert or a lawyer, Greg, but is it written down anywhere in any law in this country that we are neutral? I know there's flowery language in the Constitution about international peace and harmony and all that, but it's a position that political parties have taken place down the years. And that's a luxury, you know, that we've been able to go along with. Now, we're a member of the European Union, and as far as I know, we're the only country, only full member of the European Union that's actually regards ourselves as a neutral country. And Poland at the moment is a member of the European Union, and they've got the largest standing army of any other country. And I'm talking about Germany and France and Britain. They can put a million soldiers on the road tomorrow if we ask them to do that. And the reason why they've done that is because they're very concerned about Ukraine folding over, and of course that they're going to be next in the crosshairs of Russia. Why do I bring that up? The interesting thing about this is that we voted in the Maastricht Treaty in 1992 through referendum in this country to adopt that agreement. And in the middle of that, there's an Article 42 which says that we, Ireland, as a member of the European Union, have signed up to actually defending a country within the European Union if it comes under threat. Now, it was very easy for us to do that in 1992. It's a long, long time ago, over 30 years ago, when there was nothing on the horizon. What would happen, we'll say, for instance, if Russia was to attack Poland? We've actually signed up to an agreement here that we would have to come to their aid. We've also signed up to the EU foreign policy here. There was a very interesting article in the Guardian in Britain about 3 weeks ago about ICE, you know, the anti-immigration, or whatever you call the outfit in America that are repatriating people to the country. And there are flights going through Shannon Airport at the moment. There was a photograph of it in The Guardian on the 7th of February where people from Palestinian nationality are being repatriated against their will back to Palestine. And some of those are going to end up in the clutches of the security forces of Israel. We've had a long, long history in this country of talking about the fact that we're neutral, but we're acting as if we're not.
I'll just add on, as everyone knows, but just to be clear, like, this is not a brand new conversation. During the Second World War, Breed mentioned Finnair. We facilitated flyovers from Enniskillen and elsewhere for the bombing of German U-boats off the Donegal coast. You know, that is not the actions of a neutral country. You say fly around, but we didn't. We facilitated that, and Shannon was very important too in the United States operations in Iraq and elsewhere, and still that continues. But, I mean, I think a lot of people listening to this show console themselves with the fact that we are neutral. But then again, you both of you have made very good arguments, and we'll hear from Patrick shortly, that we're neither political or military neutral. So how do we... Because at the end of the day, this call comes down to eventually a scenario whereby, you know, my three young boys are effectively rounded up to go and defend Poland. And no one, I don't think, signing up for that in this country.
No, but de facto, we actually have, you know, Greg, we have signed up for it. And we sort of, it was okay when we were voting in a referendum 30 or 35 years ago when none of this stuff was in the horizon, but it's actually now at our doorstep here. And we don't know how things are going to unfold here. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was an elderly lady that worked in the weather station in Achill Island passed away. I think she was 98 years of age or whatever. And she actually passed, was responsible for making a very correct forecast about the weather. Eisenhower was heading for Normandy on Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, D-Day. That's why it's called the 4th of June. It was put back for 48 hours on the say-so of that woman because that information was passed on. I mean, that's a long, long time ago. We weren't neutral then. Every single year since then, there's been an action or activity by the government in this country to go along with that. So we're not neutral. We say it, but we're not acting it.
Okay, well, I'm going to come back to both of you and find out what do you believe that actually means then going forward. But I also want the views of Patrick McGowan. Do you accept that, Councillor, the framing that we're neither politically nor military neutral, if the truth be told, and we need to have an open conversation about that?
Yeah, well, I think, and good morning, Patrick and Breach. I think we are, politically, we're not neutral. We're absolutely not. We're a member of the European Union, and we're also part of the larger union. And, you know, for us, this wee country, to sit back and ignore what Russia is doing, you know, the savagery, you know, it's something that went on in the Second World War. Like, it's just simply...
We ignore a lot of stuff, though, Patrick. You know, we're only taking an interest in this one, maybe, because Europe is, but there's lots of stuff happening around the world that we actually do ignore.
Come here, if it was happening in Letterkenny, I think we would notice it. The near does to you, obviously, it brings it home and in Europe, and we thought we had left that behind us many, many years ago. But look, I think politically we're not neutral. Militarily, we are. And you're right, both Ali and Breach have said that we're certainly crossing lines here and we're going on. But I don't see a small country like Ireland, we don't think we're going to be seen as a threat to anybody. But at the same time, you know, we just can't sit back. I can't see us sending troops into war zones. They're talking about removing us even from peacekeeping at the moment. Like, so we don't have, maybe that's a good thing, we don't have the Navy, the Air Force, nor the soldiers, regardless of what tanks we buy.
So in terms of this, well, exactly, which makes the purchase of them seem almost ridiculous. But this 90 billion euro loan that we will be contributing to, some of that may buy bombs, some of that may buy bullets that will end up taking the lives of young Russian soldiers. Should we be participating?
We're only contributing to it if depending on the outcome of this aggression from Russia, because it's not a war, it's simply an aggression. But like the European Union holds a lot more than 90 billion, like belonging to Russia, and depending on the outcome of these negotiations, if we ever get to the end of it, that'll decide who pays for pays these bills back.
We're talking about this 90 billion euro loan, right, which the EU say is necessary. So obviously I'm asking the question in presuming that this is how Ukraine is funded, that those with a veto can be worked around. Do you believe, if this 90 billion euro EU loan is approved and we don't know whether or not it will be spent on bombs or bullets or whatever, that we should contribute to that as a military neutral country?
Yeah, I think we do. I think the government has made our position very, very clear, and all of our partners in Europe knows that in Australia. And like, not all of this money, all of this money is not going to military. A lot of this is just going to go to ambulances and fire brigades and everything else. Like, so that's as far as Ireland's concerned. Ireland has said it very, very clearly in every way we can. We've said it both in word and deed throughout our history. We don't attack nobody, and we certainly don't respect others that do that.
Yeah, but we are. We're contributing to Ukraine's war machine.
We're, Well, look, I would argue we're contributing to peace. There's an aggressor out there, that like it's like a rapist or a murderer running about. You just can't ignore them.
Yeah.
No, do that, and then that's what allows. We need this to stop now. Mm. And by us sitting back and other countries sitting back, you know, you just can't ignore this one.
Like, I respect your view, and I think a lot of people agree with you, but it is presuming that everybody in this country shares that framing of what's happening in the part of the world we're referencing. Okay, Patrick, thank you for that. So I'll put the direct question to you, Paddy. You know, in the knowledge, whether we want to make it out as if it's stretchers and Band-Aids, but the reality is we are contributing a war chest, effectively, to a war chest for Ukraine. Should Ireland, as a country that purports to be military neutral, be contributing to this $90 billion EU loan to Ukraine?
I think it's very valid, and it's the right thing to do to give non-lethal and non-military aid to Ukraine. It's just a pity that the whole thing was all put into one box or one bag. So Patrick made reference to the ambulance and the fire brigade, which is he's right to say that it'll go towards that, and tents and medicines and
but
so on.
Spin.
But it just happens that right beside that there'll be a tank.
And I'm not saying it's spin from Patrick, by the way, Patrick. And you can jump in at any stage. I don't want you to think I'm talking about you and not to you. But that spin, it might save a 4-year-old child, and you could see a picture of it and feel better about it. But the truth is this is a war chest, which will also be used to fund a war against Russia, should we be contributing to it, Paddy?
See, if we were having this conversation in Moscow now, the four of us, and we were at the receiving end of this 90 million or 90 billion, we would have taken a very dim view of it, because we wouldn't be able to decouple what was non-lethal aid and what was lethal aid. I am sure that it is not beyond the bounds of reality here that that money could have been decoupled. That would save 60
but
billion of it was military aid, and 30 billion of it, which was earmarked for us to contribute. It's just a pity, I think. From the optics of it, it looks bad.
But the optics of it is designed exactly to look like a united front right across Europe.
I'm
sure there are other countries that may not have considered a veto if it were decoupled, but this is about sending a united message from all of EU that we back Ukraine in terms of, you know, charity, in terms of medicine, but also in terms of war. So it is what it is. And with that in mind, should we be contributing to it?
Well, you know, we should be contributing to the non-lethal aid.
Yeah, but we can't do
right?
that, you see.
No, we can't do that. And there are 27 countries, I think, in the European Union, and 26 of them are aligned one way or the other. We're the only neutral one. And it is a pity that we've got washed away in the flood of the water here by the fact that because we could have, surely this aid could have been divided up 60
but
for
that's,
that
you talked about
that, but they haven't done that, and I think that's
optics,
just a pity, because
the optics
it just
a,
damages our reputation and our stance on being a neutral country.
But you believe we should just go ahead with it anyway because it's our moral responsibility, or not?
The non-lethal aid. It's just a pity that it is framed in the way that it is, because it sort of damaged our reputation
as
neutral country.
Breed, what do you think? Should we, given where we are?
This is, and I, no disrespect to any of my co-contributors, but this is the issue. This is the hypocrisy of it all. It's like, you know, please God, make me good, but just not yet. We can't just distinguish between lethal and non-lethal aid. This is a war. Young Ukrainian men and women are getting killed. Young Russian men and women are getting killed. And it is up to Europe to try and stop the aggressor. And the aggressor here is very, very clearly and very, very plainly Russia. Mm. And people will get killed. So there's, to me, this notion that we divide it between lethal and non-lethal, that we're going to contribute, but we want to set terms and conditions as to where our money goes. That's just pure hypocrisy. It's a war.
Okay. But it is a war, but until whether you like him or not, Donald Trump got involved. You talked about ending the war. Europe had no interest in ending this war. It never gave any indication at all. It effectively says we'll continue giving Ukraine money to send them to the front line, the meat grinder, as they call it. Like, I think Europe up until Trump's intervention didn't give any signs off to me at all that they had any interest in ending this war.
I don't think they had no interest. I didn't think they had the battle, or I didn't think that they had the united approach that was needed to take. I think Ursula von der Leyen is very, very weak. I think Europe as a whole is very, very weak at the moment. And I don't think it's that they didn't want to do anything about it. I think it's more that they couldn't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that the man in the White House is actually contributing anything at the moment.
No, I know. I understand that. But I was on about at least we have a situation where the Ukrainians and Russia delegations are sitting around a table discussing it. It's still Russia don't seem very honest.
I think it's the case that
they,
it's not that they wouldn't, it's that they couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I would say, Greg, that Europe was doing a lot before the incumbent and the White House come in. Like, they were all united. It's when Trump came in that he started to take over. It was his way and no way. He sidelined Europe, didn't invite them to meetings and that. They were at the one, they were supplying and supporting them. And I think it probably might have been over at this stage. But Trump, nobody seems to know where Trump's coming from. It seems to be more financial and deals going on behind the scenes. And, you know, nobody knows what's going on there. But Trump has definitely tried to sideline Europe and a lot of this. Like, and the only one way to defeat them is by being united. And I think we still maintain our neutrality, but not politically. We're against this violence. I think we have to stand up. We're against the violence. It doesn't matter what form it comes. Mm-hmm. And Russia is wrong in this case. And they need to be told that at every opportunity.
Okay, Councillor Patrick McGowan, thank you very much indeed. We're also hearing from Paddy Rooney and Breed Curran. Some of your comments coming in. We are a neutral country. Unlawful government ministers have broken the law with our neutrality, though Paddy Rooney referenced, where's the reference to that in the Constitution? Some of your contributors sound well schooled by government. We are neutral. We don't bother anyone, not like England, stuck in everyone's business. What we're going to do, throw stones. We signed up to Europe for free VRT on cars in Europe. Well, that didn't work, did it? Well, says another, Ireland was known and, dare I say, loved worldwide. Our peacekeepers were respected and we had a good relationship with America and European countries. Now, thanks to consecutive leaders signing up to pacts that were not fully disclosed to the general public. In fact, any big changes are drip-fed in deceptive language. They've painted a target on us from Russia, America, Israel, by their aggressive language from men who want to leave a large impression. And on it goes. Right, we can come back to that. At the inaugural public meeting of the Donegal Local Community Safety Partnership this week, we learned that while Garda numbers in the county have crept up to 436, we're still nearly 30 officers short of where we were just 5 years ago. At the same meeting, we heard the frightening claim that you can drive the entire length of the Donegal coast without seeing a single patrol car, a lack of visibility that residents in places like Dunfanaghy say is now manifesting as open antisocial behaviour, including recent reports of daytime thefts, generally speaking, by the way, and the intimidation of women. Are we seeing a lawless vacuum opening up in Donegal because of a recruitment crisis we can't control, or has the Garda operating model simply failed the very communities it was supposed to protect? Councillor Patrick McGowan.
Yes, Greg. Like a lot of people, I would be very concerned at particularly in recent changes. Now, the Minister for Justice was in the county some time ago, and like yourself, there's between you could say Ballyshannon and Chrysler, and between Ballyshannon. Sorry, there's an echo.
No, carry on. Yep.
Sorry, between Ballyshannon and Chrysler, and between Ballyshannon and Castlefun, where I'm living here, just above Castlefun, this has all been monitored out of Ballyshannon. We're only a few minutes, both on the Chrysler side and this side. So the way the county has been broken up, at beggar's belief, like, and we have asked the minister, and when it comes to Garda numbers and the deployment of them, and when it comes to these changes, they are sending us down to the new commissioner, but it's far from satisfactory. We're just not satisfied at all, considering the coastline that we have to cover, but considering the border too, the border from Derry to Pettico. Like, it's just, it's once again a lack of understanding about their periphery.
Is enough being done to raise this issue in the Dáil, do you think? I seem to recall going back 10, 15, 20 years ago, and in fact, a lot of the time it was your party colleague, Pat the Cope Gallagher, raising issues about the level of policing in this county. You know, we have seen your Gardaí fully aware that there is, you know, that they are they have limited resources. They look for them, they're just not getting them. Do we need to be making more of a noise on a national scale to sort of try and strengthen the argument for better resources? Because everything you've pointed out, we all know, and I don't mean that in any way disrespectful, but we need action up top.
Yeah, look, like most of the, a lot of the councillors, I'll put it that way, they're probably in contact with Pat the Cope Gallagher literally every day. I probably was in contact with him yesterday, let's say five or six times, being passports and everything. That's one of the things we talked about. One new guard that one passed out. That's what Donegal got. So I know Pat had raised this with the minister in the Dáil. Like, it's just simply not. There's no justification. This is like when we went on previously and regarding the hospital. You know, there's just the people making decisions behind the closed door, and they cannot. They just simply cannot be justified. And it's up to all of our TDs. And, you know, we have eight Oireachtas members in this county, and at least it shows you what can happen when they work together. Look what happened in Letterkenny, you got in the hospital, and these other things. But it's continually about, you know, playing the man rather than playing the ball. And you're right, all of us, including Terry McConnell, refer to our own Oireachtas members within the party. But it's time they started from the Donegal jersey. Look, you're entitled to keep the different political opinions, but occasionally, once a month, a couple of times a year, put on the Donegal jersey and get these. These are open goals. These are obviously mistakes, and ministers can't stand over it, but it's all past then. The NT senior civil servants, they cannot justify it, and they need to be challenged. And roaring and shouting on the Dáil isn't necessarily to bring in change. So okay. I think it's definitely something needs to be done.
Right. Breed, what we've seen a trend here with our Community Garda information slot, I don't want to say trend actually because it's not a full picture of crime, but, you know, a lot of these crimes now are happening 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the evening, 6 o'clock in the evening, 7 o'clock, 8, 9, you know, some in broad daylight. And it's not a huge leap to connect that with this sense that you're not going to encounter a guard. So, you know, and don't forget to unmute yourself there, Breed. Sorry, Justin, I know you're muted during the break, but go ahead, Breed.
Yeah, and it's not common, unfortunately, to Donegal. I live in North County Galway, work in County Roscommon. We have a similar problem here with regards to recruitment from An Garda Síochána, and all the new recruits seem to be sent to the big urban centres like Galway, Cork, Limerick, Dublin. The main issue, unfortunately, is visibility. If you cannot see a guard, then if you are committed to committing a crime, then you're going to chance it, because if there's no visibility, then that's an open goal for them, unfortunately. The position, unfortunately, is the recruitment, the problem with recruitment. The terms and conditions and the working terms and conditions of members of An Garda Síochána are absolutely deplorable. In the last 6 weeks, I've met two young female guards who have resigned from An Garda Síochána because of assaults that they received while dealing with members of the public. One was assaulted by a 16-year-old girl who was high on drugs. The other was assaulted by a man in a prison cell who slammed her up against the wall of the prison cell. Again, somebody who was out of his mind on drugs. The issue here, unfortunately, is we're not making An Garda Síochána an attractive career path. We're not supporting our members of An Garda Síochána. We're constantly giving out about them. The number of people who tell the guards when they're stopped at traffic checkpoints or stopped for any reason, have you not got more to be doing with your time? Can you not be catching real criminals? There's no respect for An Garda Síochána anymore, unfortunately, in this country. That's what I'm seeing as a practicing criminal solicitor.
I think that's correct.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's good to hear someone saying it, because there is definitely, and I actually think it's accelerated dramatically since they were asked to sort of enforce COVID regulations.
COVID. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
It really is, it's got to the point now. Shove a camera in the face and say, you work for me, you're nothing, don't put your hands on me, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And tragically, we have this awful hang up in relation to COVID, where it's almost as if we were, you know, held captive. And who was holding us captive? You know, not everybody thinks like this, but unfortunately, there's a certain section of the community, and they're very vocal about this, and they're on social media. And I don't want to call them right wing, because, you know, they're entitled to their opinions. But unfortunately, a lot of their opinion involves telling the rest of whoever's listening to them that the guards are not to be trusted.
Yeah, but
and the guards are not doing their job.
And you're right. I know there are extremes, but at the same time, we were all stopped at a checkpoint saying, what shop are you going to? Lidl's closer.
Absolutely.
And I'm not blaming the guards, but I remember how I felt when these questions were being asked.
Absolutely. Like, and that's the problem. You know. Unfortunately, I'm hoping that the new Garda commissioner can reverse that trend where you know, I mean, those two young women that I spoke to during, you know, since Christmas, and, you know, the stories that they were telling me in relation to these assaults, you know, one being assaulted by a 16-year-old girl. I mean, for the love of God, I mean, when I was a young person growing up, I was afraid of the guards.
But before I bring Paddy Inbreed, we're not going to gently get respect back, is it, though? I mean,
no,
you know,
it has to be earned.
Yes, but also, too, maybe that has to be earned. Like, the guards at the moment, if you everything's being filmed or what have you, if you your behaviour is being tracked, you can be disciplined and have some sort of you can have a complaint against you and have some sort of a disciplinary procedure hanging over you for 2 or 3 years. Do we not have to, does the Gardaí not have to get tough? Maybe, you know, get the respect through, not fear, I don't know what the right word is, but in other words, you have to respect the uniform and the badge, because if you don't, there could be consequences.
Absolutely. I think it's only when you need the guards that you, you know, I mean, if you're involved, if you're the victim of a crime and you realise just how hard the majority of An Garda Síochána members work, that you appreciate the job that they do. And unfortunately, and yes, it is something that has to be earned. I am a hugely in favour of Garda reforms with regards to, you know, what the current commissioner is planning with regards to drugs testing and accountability and all that. I have no issue at all with that. I've no issue with GSOC or FISRA or whatever they're calling themselves this week. I've no issue in relation to all of that. But what I do have is this lackadaisical response to, you know, not fostering that respect for An Garda Síochána that used to be there. And it's only when you need them. And you, like, if you've got a guard coming to your door at 3 o'clock in the morning telling you that, you know, something tragic has happened, then you appreciate what they do. So why can't we appreciate what they do the
because
rest
there
of the
is
time?
A, because they because the image of the Gardaí is not being controlled by the Gardaí. They're not.
Yes.
They're not actively.
And they need to take back that control.
The perception and image of Gardaí is being controlled in a different space, and when you don't push back or you don't have something in that space, the vacuum allows.
And that's
this
the problem.
Type of,
we
stuff.
Haven't the government and we as a nation have not pushed back and told these people who are shoving phones in Garda's faces and saying, "Have you nothing better to be doing with your time? Can you not catch real criminals?" We need to call those people out and say to them, "They're doing a good job. They're doing a job."
Okay.
And when you need them, they're there.
Paddy, what do you think?
Greg, this conversation has meandered off in the direction of a recruitment issue in the Gardaí. So is it a case then that there are a whole raft of Garda positions in Donegal that are not filled because there's a recruitment issue? Or is it due to the fact of the low numbers that are funded in Donegal in the first place? I presume it's the latter. That's the number that are on the ground. We've moved away. Donegal's a very, very large county. It's 100 miles, Greg, from Bundoran to Malinhead, roughly. It's not a very densely, with the exception of Letterkenny, it's not a densely populated area. We've moved away from the fact of having a Garda station in every village, and the local newspapers at the end of the month reported the crime was somebody was in court because they didn't have a light on their bike, but a farmer had an unlicensed bull, or a pub was opened after hours. We're in a new place now because the recent reports, I think, from the Gardaí about crime. There's been a massive increase in things like fraud and scamming and stuff like that. And you can have 10 guards on in every street corner in Donegal, and it won't protect against that. However, there does seem to be a problem around visibility. We're very, very good at in this country, Greg, at making laws, but we're not very, very good at enforcing them. There's been a conversation on your programme earlier on this week as a result of the tragic death of the two young guys over in East Donegal about Garda manpower on the road and checkpoints. There's a very high number of people who are driving cars at the moment without a full licence. There are a lot of people who are still driving on the road, even though they've been convicted of a driving offence and been suspended. There's about a quarter of the people out there apparently that are driving that have no car insurance. There is a lot of petty crime out there that business people, you know, things like shoplifting, bicycles being stolen. It's not even been reported for the simple reason is people feel it is not
okay,
worth
but 20,
the bother. So
yes,
we
but
had
26
problem.
Years ago when I was young, guards were in the schools. There was a guard in Ballyshannon. There was a guard in Ballintra Garda Station. There was a sergeant in the area. Donegal Town was staffed. I'm sure the Twin Towns was the same. You would see Garda patrol cars everywhere. We're down 30 guards, and you will not see one guard from the end of the day to the other. Where are they? I know it's a huge county, but I know, and I know our listeners know, that 30 years ago, you knew where the guards were and you knew they knew you. And there's only been a slight reduction in numbers. And even an increased population doesn't actually explain that, because the towns are all still there, the roads are all still there, and the general topography is the same, right? So this model of policing that we use now has taken those guards. They're invisible. It's not their fault. They're gone. And they're not in the local areas anymore, but we still actually don't know where they are.
Yeah, and the current Minister of Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, when he was a backbench TD, and particularly around the time of the last general election, he was extremely critical, hypercritical of the then Minister of Justice, Helen McEntee, about how she was running the Department of Justice and the lack of law and order, and particularly around the time when all the riots were taking place in Dublin a couple of Novembers ago. Now, he's the Minister of Justice now for the last 15 months, and he's gone very, very quiet on this, because I think that the Minister of Justice and the higher echelons of the Gardaí, the Garda Commissioner, need to explain to us, because I don't know it, about the current model of how policing is actually done in this country. Because what expectations have we got of the Gardaí, and are those expectations being met? And I suspect that there is a deep blue water, Greg, between those two.
We were told
things.
That the new policing model would mean that, OK, you lose your Garda in Dunfanaghy, for an example, but the patrol cars would be always out and about, so they'd actually be more flexible. Yet something goes wrong in Dunfanaghy or Carrigard or St Johnston or wherever it might be, Mount Charles, and all of a sudden the guards have to respond from Letterkenny or the guards have to respond from Ballyshannon. So what we were told would be the system is not the system at all. So where are the guards? Sorry, Breed, go ahead.
It's a recruitment issue. It's a recruitment issue.
But all
it's
the guards. But that's why I made this reference to going back to my youth. The same amount of guards are there now as
no,
are.
There's not.
Yeah, in Donegal.
No,
in Donegal,
and there's an increased population. There's an increased population as well.
That doesn't. And I really bow to your experience
every,
in this. But in
unit,
the year 2000, in the year 2000, we had 463 guards in Donegal. We now have 434. It's a 6.3% decrease over 26 years. Not insignificant, right? But all of the towns and villages are the same. There's more people, of course, and the county is the same size. Gardaí were visible then. They're invisible now. And I can't see... They're not hiding amongst the bigger population, Breed. The numbers are there, but we just don't see them.
Yeah, I think too... I think, you know, like, if you look at a lot of sectors, even look at the county council, you know, it's like people saying you And every road, you had a couple of men digging drains and that. Things do change, but I think too a lot of these Gardaís now are sort of been sent down to the major centres. like you have events on, say at nightclubs and weekends and things like that, and then by the time you give them off duty and that. Plus,
again,
a lot
Patrick,
of their...
I don't want to sound argumentative, but people in Letterkenny are arguing for foot patrols, cycle patrols, the Gardaí aren't available, we don't have the resources.
We all are. We have a band guard there in Belfast, Security Guard, and you can see her out and about, and it is great, but there's no crime happening in front of her or behind her, you know, that's not about the person. That's just, it's grand. It looks good, but a lot of the times you need to be out and about at night. The patrol cars are very important. As you said, we were told in the past, a lot of the stations closed down. The criminals would never know whether there's a patrol car coming around the corner or nothing like that. But I do think another big issue in the past, and I wouldn't accept the argument about COVID at all. Most people I talked about, they said it's like a dream. You can hardly remember that there is an excuse, particularly as you say about right wing and left wing people here. Like, as far as I'm concerned, they deserve one another. But you know, to be picking on Gardaí and that, and I for one fully respect the Gardaí, and I think it's important that we say that we respect them, we do them. Just because you might have an odd bad apple or an incident that can't be answered, it wouldn't be right. You need to be saying it all the time that we do respect our young Gardaí, you know, and that we do support them as well. But one big issue in the past, and it can't be ignored, as Gardaí was the last police commissioner. Like, they did not have the support of the rank and file. Okay, maybe he was bringing in a lot of policies on behalf of the government and that, but from day one, never had the support. They seemed to be a total loggerheads.
Everything we've talked about, though, for the last 10 or 15 minutes, it was the GRA, the rank and file Gardaí, were saying that this is the problem. We can't police like we need to be able to police. It's fascinating, and unfortunately, we've... run out of time. Councillor Patrick McGowan, thank you so very much for joining us. Look after yourself. Breed, it's always a pleasure. See you really soon.
Chris.
Thank you. And Paddy Rooney, look after yourself. Thank you so very much indeed. But on the issue of guards, one of you say, we had to go out of state for commissioner. Our commissioner is from Northern Ireland. It doesn't bode too well for them if we couldn't source our own commissioner. How can we respect the guards if they don't respect us? Which is... why we open up the phone lines, because then we get alternative views in relation to this, which is useful. It's very annoying. I got done for speeding, which I hold my hands up to. I didn't get a fine in the post, so I ended up in court, put on oath. I told my story, only ended up with my fine being doubled. That's hard to take. We have councillors from government parties complaining about a lack of fair resources being given to Donegal and that they continue to accept it. This is why we're continually ignored. Defective blocks, flights infrastructure. I can say with confidence we have the worst council in Ireland. On neutrality, lots of you get involved in neutrality. That's why I wanted to discuss it, because, like, I know it's something that is very important to people out there, but it does the political system doesn't seem to get that. And then we got a survey recently, which I've referenced a couple of times, my apologies if it bores you, talking about how, you know, the majority of us want more spending on defence. And I don't know. Anyway, listening to your show, and I don't know what planet Breach is on, we should not be contributing to any war because Ireland is a neutral country, and Ireland is not depending on France, England, Spain, as Breed says. Ireland should mind its own business and stop trying to bring us into a war. Another, ambulances and fire brigades, that's grand. One bullet, one gun, that's buying military aid, not humanitarian aid. They need to stop trying to cover up the fact that it's not military aid, or in fact, I think they're saying that in fact it is. Morning, there was another collision at Westbrook Bridge, There was another collision at Westbrook Bridge at Buncrana this morning. Not a guard to be seen. The traffic built up was shocking. Cars going here in there, to get through. Something needs to change. Also, there's an abandoned car on the Slavery Road near a corner. People need to be aware of this again. Not a guard to be seen. I can tell that councillor what is wrong with the shortage of Gardaí in Donegal. 25 Gardaí in Glenties years ago, when they were after the IRA Irishmen on the run. Now they have all sorts of runs on vetted criminals of all nationalities and only 4 or 5 Gardaí. Well done, Breed. You are so correct. Why is Greg so worried about Russia, as is Trump? They are choosing to fight, and the only way to stop them is for Europe to support. Ukraine any way is needed. That comes in from Grania. I look at things slightly more nuanced. I would look at really the years leading up to the war. I would have listened to a lot of the European commentary, the Russian commentary, the United States commentary, a lot of the conversation about the United Nations, or sorry, NATO, and NATO's distance from the border of Russia. I'd be very familiar with the fact that the reason Ukraine wasn't allowed into the EU to begin with was because of corruption within the country. I also have to consider, you know, whilst Russia is the aggressor, there was also quite a lot of bombs fired in the other direction as well. This is not in any way to take away from the hardship of the Ukrainian people. And I look at it all in the round. And it doesn't mean my view is any different to your view. But at the same time, I'm not going to be spoon-fed a narrative, and I'm not going to spin lines that Ursula von der Leyen says as if they're absolute fact. I want to look at it myself. I want to dig in a little deeper and look at the nuances of it. This caller says, pull out of the EU now. I do not want our children and grandchildren being conscripted into an army and sent to a foreign land to face sure slaughter from the lethal weapons of war that we are funding. The irony of it is, war is futile. No lessons ever learned from past history. But the one thing about past history is that history repeats itself. We have, and I've said this before in the programme, we have this notion that we live in a time that there could never be a world war again, as if, sure, we learned our lessons. No, we didn't, because there was a Second World War, there was a First World War, there was a war before that, and a war before that, and a war before that, and we as humans eventually find a way to kill each other. So I'm not saying anything is inevitable, and you would hope it's not, but let's not be naive to think that war is something that happened previously and might never happen again. Do you get where I'm coming from? And that's just so we could find ourselves in the situation that that listener just referenced. Hi, can you wish Frankie McHugh, Lack of Port New, a happy 85th birthday from his grandkids, Dylan and Georgia? Spelt lovely, actually, J-O-R-J-A, Georgia. Happy birthday to you, Hugh. Frankie McHugh. Hopefully you're listening, Frankie, and hopefully you have a wonderful birthday. Billy Blaney's in Remelton. He's 83 today. Great day for the octogenarians, lads. Keep her lit. Happy birthday, Billy Blaney in Remelton, 83 today. Have a great day from all the dancing crew.
You can walk my path. You can wear my shoes. Learn to talk like me. Be an angel too.
Yes, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Things Can Only Get Better by Doreen. It was a big anthem in the 90s. But Things Can Only Get Better was more than just a hit. It was the soundtrack to a generation's optimism. But for our podcast guest this week, frontman Peter Kuna, the journey to finding his own better has been a complex lifelong pursuit of identity and home. In the candid interview, which you'll be able to hear from 11, Peter takes us behind the platinum records and the bright lights of the 90s. We explore a life story that began at the Nazareth House, mother and baby home, his move through the streets of Derry, and eventually how he ended up on a global stage. But there is another very interesting story in there as one of the favourite children of Derry, in that he was put up for adoption, as I mentioned, and eventually did track down his birth family and made some very interesting connections. Obviously, when I say interesting connections, meeting your family, fantastic, but it all worked out really well for him. But there's just a really interesting story there. And we're going to play you a little clip of the podcast so you can get a sense of the conversation. And in this part of the chat, he picks up the story of how Derry influenced him artistically.
Derry's, if you come to Derry now, it is kick ass. Mm. That's the best way I can put it. It's got so much talent. It's a party town. It's always had that sort of suppressed joy. And now it's just, you can go out and see six bands in a night. It's like Grafton Street used to be back in the 80s. And it's wonderful. The boys and girls and all the incomers and tourists are having a great time. And for me, back in the 80s, it was a tougher time because we were under the shadow of the Troubles. Mm. We were still under the shadow of a nuclear war, and if you remember.
That's it,
but
yeah.
We still played and had fun with as best we could, you know. But a lot of the venues we were in, my first band, We were doing a gig at the Castle Bar, and the Casbah it was called, and it was blown up 2 weeks before we were supposed to play. And so we just found another venue, that's all. But you sort of just deal with it, you know? Right. But I think I remember my gran saying to me, "Why do you want to be a musician?" I was going, "Well, it's what I did." She goes, "Ah, but they're two to the penny." I had no choice.
Yeah. And Camir, I don't like to read between the lines, but that period of time, the formation and Dream becoming what it became, and that song, of course, things can only get better. Number one, you know, that's a small group of people can say that. How important is that period of your life to you at your age now?
No, I looking back in it, and I've had a couple of years to really get into. It's a funny thing writing a book compared to writing a song. A song, you've got to have four lines to get across a big idea, and a book's like you can have 400 lines to get across one idea. And for me, I thought that fame would fix in me the missing piece that I had. I thought that's what I want. And I was single-mindedly focused on that. But it wasn't. And I think that yearning that we have is part of the human spirit. I think part of it's spiritual. I think it's connection with people when we miss that. And it comes down to the important stuff. It's friends and family and love. And if we haven't got those in abundance, then I think we wither and die. And I thought the adulation, it felt like it worked for a bit, but then after a while it felt hollow. And then later on, now that I've found Patrick, it's bizarre because it just feels, I'm in some levels I'm at peace like I've never been before. I understand myself better. And I put the final piece of the jigsaw in place of this question mark that's been kind of around me my whole life. So no, it's, look, I've had the great experience, and if you know mother and baby homes, I'm a rarity in that environment. So I don't want to take away in any way from the pain that a lot of people have suffered. I've just got this story that's mine. And
well, you can only live your own truth and live your own story, can't you?
Yeah,
I mean, you can have empathy and understanding, but you can only, if it hasn't started already, you're going to hear this word an awful lot, especially as it comes close to publishing time. Cathartic, right? It's the default question you're going to get all of the time. Yeah. But you've already sort of talked to the fact that you've worked through a lot of stuff in this process. So I suppose the answer is inevitable.
Yeah, and it's like I'm 60 this August, so I'm still 59. I have to remind myself. And we're going to throw one hell of a party in Derry.
Brilliant.
In Derry, they're putting a mural of me up on the gable end of the row of houses I grew up in Clarendon Street in the town centre. Someone bought my house, my family home, and Eileen McLaughlin, she's an artist herself. And when the solicitors decided to paint the gable end of the house, now I'm talking three-story high house, Edwardian, you know, even Georgian probably, it was a listed building, so they had to wait a year to get the permission. And now the guy that's done the Derry Girls mural is up there in the scaffolding putting my bonds on the side of this thing. And we're going to launch a party for my 60th.
Okay, Peter Cooner there, and it is a very interesting conversation. As I say, we dig further into his stardom, his struggles with addiction, his adoption, as I mentioned, and also to tracking down his birth family and some remarkable coincidence in all of that. Right, okay, now we are joined by Anne Nichols. Good morning to you, Anne.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm great, yeah.
Very good. Mickey Gibbons is with us too. Hello, how are you?
Imagine why, Greg. Very well, Greg.
Right, now you're founder of Cor Alley Choir, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and how long has it been up and running?
Well, we're celebrating 25 years this year. It's a big milestone for us.
It's still very fresh.
We are, yeah. We all feel very young, so we do like we keep ourselves young. So if we want to go back to the start, I mean, most people have heard of College Daly as our all-Irish secondary school. Mm-hmm. So in September 2000, it opened its doors for the first time. And I was privileged to be the principal. And towards the end of that first year, in December, a parent came into the school called Rosie Doherty. And she informed me that the mass, 10 o'clock mass on the first Sunday of every month was in Irish. I wasn't aware of that. And she also informed me that there was no Cora Gaila Letterkenny, no Irish choir. And then she left, she planted the seed, and away she went. So then I set about setting up the choir. And basically, for people out there who've been involved in choirs, there are four essential elements in establishing a choir such as Cora Ailey. The first is, the most important one, is getting a skilled, and dare I say, a charismatic musical director. And we were lucky with our first. That day when Rosie left, I went upstairs to talk to my music teacher, whose name was Udine Vrain, and she agreed to take on that role. And she came from a very strong musical family in Limerick. So that was a great start for us. And that was one of the reasons why we've lasted so long. We've had great musical directors. We've had Frank Breslin, and now we are privileged to have Anne Nichols here. Mm. So that's the first. The second one is you need dedicated singers who are willing to sing and with a love and a graph for the Irish language. Like, so again, having been involved in the music and drama before that, I knew a number of singers. And the first four I spoke to, probably the first I spoke to was Anne Nichols here, and Frank Breslin, and Katrina McIntyre, and Tracy Monigal, and they're all still involved, and they were great people, and it was a great foundation for the choir. And then the third element is somewhere to practice. You need a dedicated practice space, and we were lucky, as I was principal of College Dial, we were able to use Sprackburn House.
Good contacts.
We had good contacts, yeah. And we practiced there for the next 12 years upstairs in Sprackburn House, yeah. And it was great. And the last one is, once you've done all that, you need a dedicated space for performing, somewhere where you can show what you've been doing. And we adopted, we were adopted possibly by St. Eunan's Cathedral. That became our spiritual home. And Father McLoone was the parish priest at the time, and he took us on, and he was delighted that we were now able to contribute to the All-Irish Mass, because anybody is involved in any religious ceremony, no matter what religion, if you have music and singing and involved, it enhances the Mass and enhances the spiritual experience.
But
of
also,
all
to
involved.
What a venue to get to. And I'm sorry to take the spiritual element. I'm not taking it out of it, right?
Yes.
But it sounds like I'm pushing past it. But if you're going to put something together and you're trying to incentivize people and you're trying to get everyone to there, and then you've got this amazing venue.
Magnificent,
size,
historical,
history, acoustics. Yeah. I don't know, maybe the acoustics are a nightmare, I don't know. But, you know, what a fantastic starting point.
Yeah.
The cathedral.
It certainly was. And every time we sing there, you know, the goose pimples are just are there. Like, it's just a fabulous, fabulous arena. And as I say, there is a spiritual aspect to it for us. But from a singing point of view, you're right. The acoustics there and the whole setting is just fantastic. And we've enjoyed the last 25 years there.
Okay, and Anne, the role of a musical director, and you're following a long line of super musical directors by Mickey's own testimony there. But what is your role?
Well, I suppose my role is to first of all pick the pieces that we're going to do, and I like to stick to nice airs. So we do a beautiful version of Danny Boy. We do Willie Go Lassie Go, The Water Is Wide. Just finished working on a new one, which is the air of Eubanks and Braes of Bonnie Doon. We've got that ready because we're travelling to Glasgow for the June Bank holiday as part of our celebrations of our 25th anniversary, and we're going to sing in St Andrew's Cathedral on the Saturday, the 30th, at 1 o'clock. And so we're delighted. We're doing our first concert now on the 6th of March in the RCC here in Letterkenny at 8 o'clock. And that's the first time we'll perform our new one, which is it's called Thra the Gahinyi. We're very lucky in the choir that we have Gabriel E. Wheel. She teaches out in Ballinamore, and she is our lyricist. She changes all the words for us, and she does a fabulous job of translating.
And it's 30 members of a choir, right? So what's the breakdown of that? Just for people will be familiar, but also we're talking to those who may wish to get along and witness this in person too, in a different setting, the Regional Cultural Centre. So what is the makeup in terms of singers and musicians? Because it's a lot of people and a lot of sound.
It is. We have 9 sopranos. We have 6 altos. We have 4 basses, and we have 4 tenors. And then we have 6 amazing musicians. We're so lucky to have Emma Martin, who's here beside me, who plays harp and banjo. We have Michael Carey, who needs no introduction, who's a renowned tin whistle player. We have a young guy from Letterkenny called Paul Gillespie, who plays cello and the Uilleann pipes. We have Aisling Cheevers, who is a beautiful violinist. We have Aoife Cross and Shields, who, again, a beautiful tin whistle player. And we have the renowned Bree Carr, again, doesn't need any introduction, who is a local singer-songwriter and also a fantastic accompanist. She can hear a tune once and she just puts amazing accompaniment to it.
Brilliant. So we'll get a piece of music, if that's okay, because Emma, Emma Martin, you're going to perform a solo piece for us as well, aren't you? And you're going to...
I'm going to do a little song for you, if that's okay.
I can't wait. Yeah. All right, whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. This is Colleen Crute in the Mob.
Blinis nis mo mi gishta leka katlisak mavium o chasalam grayam o chlifen trangon gertinak so vo vium bovanya gora hekeva is nahini like you is a roar control de fear them be uncanny just grew to no more the sula merlin run the ring excapitris per van you is there a grun on a rilla Sim, mas crave na gna. Ta baili mis mecha na smera. Is a skillet no like not a snow. Ni a lopan is jasha sitilja. Nan kali ne krutun na mo.
Wonderful stuff. There's everything in life, there's levels, isn't there?
And
no disrespect to any other musicians, but that is just on a different level. Mickey, you perform, the choir performs regularly at 10 o'clock Mass in St. Eunan's Cathedral. You don't surely get everybody in every Sunday, do you? Because that's a huge level of
commitment. No, we don't. We don't. It doesn't always suit people, but we normally have an average of about 17 people turn up for the 10 o'clock Mass. So it is a big commitment, but we have enough. We have up to 30, 35 people who sing at different times. So we always have enough for the Mass on a Sunday. But it's, you know, we talked about the venue itself and how great it is to sing there. But one thing we have great fun. So we have, like, you know, we practice a lot and Anne leads the practice. And there's never a practice without a laugh, about a fun. And that sustains us as well. Like, it's a great social outlet for all the choir members. So, yeah, that's and we travel a lot too.
Okay, and we're talking ahead of a special performance. It's at the Regional Cultural Centre, Letterkenny. It's a special concert on Friday, March 6th. Tickets are €20. And when you curating this concert? What's the feel you're going for? What journey are you trying to bring the audience on with you?
Well, I think because it's Seachtain na Gaeilge, that's why we decided to do it on March the 6th as part of the celebrations of Seachtain na Gaeilge. So it's really just to promote the whole concert is either Irish music, Irish songs, and we're also going to be joined on the night by a young girl from Letterkenny called Macushla, who is getting great traction in Glasgow at the moment with BBC Glasgow. And she's from Letterkenny, Louise Rowland's her name, and she blends electronica, dream pop and Irish folklore. And she's been hailed as the new Enya. So she's a beautiful artist. I've heard her perform before. So she's going to join us on the night. And as well as that, we have Gavin Shevlin, who's a renowned Irish dancer. So it's a whole night of celebration of Irish music, Irish culture, as part of our own celebrations of our 25 years and also to celebrate Seachtain na Gaeilge.
We're going to have another piece of music now from Emma Martin, and she's going to be accompanied by Michael Carey, who pops up here in Highland Radio on quite a regular basis. And Michael's sitting a little further back. So, Emma, do you want to set it up for us?
We're playing two pieces, actually.
Yeah, I can do that for you. You know, we can hear you, yeah, Michael. So good. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, we've just got... We're going to play two pieces, a slow one to begin with, by the name of Lace and Ban Rianna, which was written by Nulla Gleekazi, and it means Fort of the Fairy Queen. And we'll follow that with a slightly pacier tune called St. Patrick's Day, now that we're nearly there. Okay, let's have a go.
And for my benefit, one will flow into the other, right?
Absolutely.
So I shall not interrupt. Okay, take it away whenever you're ready. Thank you. Lovely stuff. Absolutely wonderful. That was Mickey Gibbons and Emma Martin. And we have just brought you a couple of elements of the talent. But until you hear it in its entirety, you really won't understand fully what we're talking about unless you're a regular on a Sunday morning, right? So it's a concert that is taking place in the Regional Cultural Centre, Letterkenny. It's on Friday, the March 6th. Tickets are just €20, and there's an awful lot of people there and an awful lot of cost to cover in terms of hosting it and all that type of stuff as well. So sounds like a bargain to me. We're going to play out with an audio piece that's been sent to us, Mickey, where it'll give us a greater sense of the choir in earnest, I think.
Yes, just one thing I'd like to add. I said one of the things we have in the choir is we have a lot of fun, but we're like a big family. We're always there for each other in good times and in bad times. And unfortunately, recently we lost one of our members, Gavin Burke from Newton Cunningham. And a sign of what the choir is about, that the whole choir turned up and sang at Gavin's funeral. Wow. Everybody that was in the country could be there, were there, and they sang at his Mons Mine Mass as well. And part of the proceeds of the concert on the 6th will go towards Donegal Hospital, isn't that right, Anne? You know, as a mark of respect. So, but that just says a lot for what we are as a group, like, you know. Yes, we're preserving the Irish language, we're singing, but we're very a close-knit group as well, like, so. It's a great experience.
It's family, isn't it?
It's family, yes.
And you've lost a member of your family, and our condolences to you in relation to that. Okay, tickets are available where, Anne?
From the RCC website or from Ingrain and Theatre. Okay. So they're selling fast, so
get your tickets. It'll sell out. It's just whether you get your ticket on time to be there.
Exactly.
There's just no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Anything else we'd like to add? Or we're all good, because we're going to play out then with
Issa Glan-Mochrisha.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, yeah. That's good. I wasn't given that information. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, just set this up for us, this song then. This is a recording of the choir.
This is the whole choir. So we have the harp and the Paul and the cello, and we have the whistles, we have the instruments in it. And then myself and Katrina McIntyre sing the first verse, and then the whole choir comes in. Then
looking forward to it. Right, now, this is a huge undertaking. It's about 500 kilometres, right? And it's
the James 500,
Russell. I know. It's the James Russell Memorial. Tell me about it. What? Why this? Well, I suppose in the process, you're going to tell me a little bit about James, I'm sure.
Yeah, James was my brother-in-law, and he formed Cancer last year, and he sadly passed away on the 29th of May. He had pancreas and liver cancer, and within 12 weeks, he had died. And so James is from Churchill in Donegal, out there in Letterkenny, and he met his, let's say, love of his life down years ago in Kerry, and moved down to Kerry, where he spent his last 35 years. But he never forgot his Donegal roots. He always come back every weekend, or most weekends he could get back to Donegal. And to say, he formed the cancer, and within 12 weeks, he was no longer with us.
It's shocking, isn't it?
And James was a man, he done a lot of charity work himself, a lot of charity work down in Kerry, for cancer, and many more charities, and Woman Aid, and Lifeboat charity. He done it on his motorbike. So when we got the sad news that he had cancer, he had talked to me about his arranging his funeral and things, and he said he had one more bike run to do. And he asked me what to carry out his washers, if I would do it. Wow. And I decided then, I'm not a man for motorbikes, so I said that I would do it on a tractor, a vintage tractor. And why are you doing it on a vintage tractor? This tractor is special because she's the family tractor. She was in the family for many years, and she was parked in the shed for over 30 years. And James always said he would do her up and get her back on the road again.
Mm.
So before he took sick, he'd always intention to do this. So I said I would do it for him and get her back on the road. And sadly, then he took sick and he didn't see her finished. So my intention was always to get the tractor finished and take him down to him and let him see the tractor. So I just didn't get that far. We're just halfway through. It took 3 months to get the tractor refurbished from start to finish. And sadly, he had passed away in between times.
Unbelievable.
So I said to my wife, Ruth, I want to do something for these two special, the Donegal Hospice and Kerry Hospice. So James spent a short time in Kerry Hospice.
Mm.
It was only short, a few days. And because Donegal was so close to my heart, with family members, I said I would do a vintage tractor run from Kerry to Donegal in his memory.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. And what a tribute to an amazing man. People will be able to follow the progress and updates in advance on Facebook. Also to James Russell Memorial Tractor Run Search on Facebook. There's a few more vintage tractors doing it with you. And if people want to support you, because you mentioned, you know, it's €20 per vehicle, which is great, okay, but I know your ambitions for the charities are much greater than that. How can people contribute other than taking part?
Well, we'll put up details online, and brilliant, we have sponsor cards going out, and we have a bank account. We have a committee set up now, and we can donate through that as well.
Okay. Well done, Terence. I really appreciate you.
And
coming
we,
on.
Go ahead. I know it's the tractor run is from. We have to keep it restricted to so many tractors for the safety on the roads. The Gardaí wants a small number of tractors coming from Kerry to Donegal. So I think there's six friends doing it with me, or seven. And then when we reached Letterkenny and behind the Clanree, we're going to farm up on the Sunday, the 24th. Hopefully we should arrive there around 12 o'clock. And we're taking... It's open to everybody. Mm. I mean, everybody. Yeah, all the, tractors, yeah. All vehicles out to Churchill to his native town.
Lovely.
And we're going to have a barbecue out there then when we arrive. Hopefully we'll arrive safe and well. Right. And all processes going to these two great charities, Dunning Hospice and Gary Hospice.
All right, Terence, listen, we'll let people, we'll remind people a little closer to the time, because obviously it's a great undertaking what you're doing, but the real sort of interactive part for people in our part of the world is going to be that last leg of the journey. So closer to the time, we'll remind people of your arrival and the event and the barbecue, etc. But for now, thank you so very much for joining us, Terence McClintock. And Shannon Wilkins in with me for Shannon's
Scroll Patrol.
I wrote you a jingle.
Oh, did you actually?
Yeah, do you want to hear
so
it?
So excited.
Okay, here we go.
Word up. Yo, check the technique. Word up. My program's the truth. Yeah, it's always on point. Cause Shannon Scroll Patrol keeps the whole joint anointed. We run the data, make the system flourish. Shannon Scroll Patrol, the info, it'll polish. Yeah, every user input, every line, every letter. Shannon Scroll Patrol is making the results better. The Scroll Patrol!
What do you think?
I'm going to have to get copyright for that now.
I did a second one.
Turn the volume up now. Let's go. Could a Cube show on the radio? Shannon's on the screen. A brand new scene. Scanning what the internet has seen.
Oh, yeah.
Click, click, refresh. The feed is flying. All the viral trends we're now supplying.
We're the Scroll Patrol. Taking back control.
See the likes and shares go through the roof. Yeah, we got the evidence and all the proof.
We're the Scroll Patrol. Whoa, whoa. It's our goal.
Shannon Scroll Patrol is on a roll.
Scroll Patrol, let's take a stroll. On the Scroll Patrol. Yeah.
I like the second one. We might actually use the second one.
I think that could be played even on Ivan's show, The Power Hour. Like,
Same vibe. So there you go. That's it. That's the interest to take in what you have to. I actually want to hear that second one again.
I know, I'll be listening to it tonight, just dancing in the kitchen.
Right, this is Who Does Trend. What's going on here then, mate?
I don't know if you've seen this one. It's similar to the 2016 trend. So we're all big boys and girls in our big boy and girl jobs. But to try and make us feel a bit better about everyone, just remember everyone was a child at the end of the day.
Yes.
So it's everyone whenever they were wee tootsies. And it's this is the person who keeps the nine till noon show. Oops,
no, don't say that.
The Greg Hughes show running. This is the person who presents the Greg Hughes show. This is who answers your calls at reception, and it's all like.
Oh right, so it gives people a background as to who's involved in what.
Yeah, but they're all like five and under.
Okay. But are they pictures of us when we're kids?
Pictures of us.
But there's only three of us. Like, and thankfully, of course, we've got the sports team, but the support team. Okay. Are we going to do that?
If you can source
a picture
of you.
I have one picture from when I was...
Because trying to get pictures of you even from 2016 was difficult.
That's true. Benny Blanco's feet.
Have you seen this one?
I'm trying to think who Benny Blanco is.
He is Selena Gomez's husband.
Oh, yes.
And everyone... She's beautiful, and everyone always says
he's not so
beautiful.
There was pictures of her taken on holidays. I don't know if you saw her in a one-piece swimsuit. And she looks fantastic, don't get me wrong. But the crappy, dirty, rotten tabloids still at this crack of comparing her image now to her on the catwalk. And I would have I'm not trying to be all woke here, but I thought we'd have moved past that. She's on her holidays on a beach chilling. And we're still completely and utterly... anyway, sorry, what about Benny Blanco's feet?
He was on a podcast the last day, Friends Keep Secrets, and this beautiful white couch, you know, lovely setup, great pod setup, and he had the dirtiest feet ever. It was like he didn't wash them.
Okay.
So now there are people calling for them to get divorced, and then people are saying that there's a previous interview of him from like November in 2024, and apparently he doesn't shower every day. So people are like, he's really dirty.
Can I just say, by the way, the cleanliness of your feet is not connected to showering. You can wash your blooming feet. That's disgusting. But it could also be the fault of whoever's charged with cleaning the floor. Fergie in Donegal. This is Fergie. What's her second name? I got excited.
Is she I thought it was Fergie. Windsor?
I thought it was Fergie from Black Eyed Peas, but it's,
Hi, Fergalicious.
It's Andrew's. I don't know what their relationship
former
is.
Wife.
So it's what, she's here chilling out?
Allegedly. So we can't tell if this is just resurfacing from her visit in around October, November 2024. So she was in the Ballyliffin Lodge and Spa.
Okay.
So people, excuse me, are wondering if she's there again. But guess who is going to Ballyliffin tomorrow and just so happens to be there?
Who?
Misha.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I will be on Fergie Patrol tomorrow.
Fergie Patrol.
Not just Scroll Patrol.
All right, brilliant. Sunday roast in-flight meal. I think this is the last one we have time for. What's this about? A Sunday roast. So this is someone having a Sunday roast on a flight.
She has the whole works. This is following on from the Scranset van. I just thought, you know, Sunday roast on the plane. She pre-cooked everything. Made the gravy herself on the plane.
And took it out on the plane.
Yeah, so they gave her hot water and she had the granules.
Can you do that?
You can. See, I remember I was just sitting on a flight one day and someone started eating a spag bol. And I was actually really jealous because you know you get those rotten sandwiches.
But like, where would you be flying to? Does it say where she was flying to?
It doesn't say. It wasn't like even a long flight.
Like, that's... Sit on your bum. Twiddle your thumbs for 50 minutes.
But you'd save so much money too. Do you know, like, you get off the plane, you're hungry, you're starving.
Okay, okay, brilliant stuff. What's the strangest thing you've bought on a plane with you? Shannon, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Stay there, though, because...
Turn the volume up now, let's go. Could a Q show on the radio? Shannon's on the screen, a brand new scene. Scanning what the internet has seen.
Oh, yeah.
Click, click, refresh, the feed is flying. All the viral trends we're now supplying.
We're the Scroll Patrol.
The Scroll Patrol. Okay, listen, have a fantastic weekend, Shannon.
You too, thank
Enjoy
you.
Ballyliffin, you lucky duck.
We're delicious.
It's our goal.
Shannon Scroll Patrol is on a roll.
Scroll Patrol, let's take a stroll.
Right, okay, have a fantastic weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday at 9 o'clock.